What is your name?
I'm Denise McCarty.
And where do you live?
And I live in the country west of Ashland, north of Englewood.
Okay. What's your occupation?
I'm a little bit of everything. wife, mother, grandmother.
Okay. And how old are you?
I'm 65.
Okay. And what's your name?
Mike McCarty.
And where do you?
North of Englewood.
Okay.
I'm a rancher farmer.
And how old are you?
And I'm 64.
Okay. So, when did you first become aware of the Starbuck fire, hereafter referred to simply as the fire?
I was aware of it at, I was eating dinner at Marcella's in Englewood, and the pager went off. And I immediately, with the way the wind was blowing that day, I immediately called Bernie Smith and told him, I said, I'm not going to Mokane, I'll stay in Clark County in case. And so that's when I immediately was aware of it.
And I was in Ashland babysitting my grandson, and my phone has a fire alert on it, and I heard the pager go off for a fire, and I can't hear anything beyond that, but it sounded like it was pretty desperate, and I knew that, so I called Mike and to make sure he wasn't going anywhere, because I was worried. And so now it was fine. It was far off, he said. So I said, okay, and went about my business.
Okay, so what was your first reaction when you found out that the fire was likely to hit your property?
Well, can I go into a little bit?
Yeah, sure.
30 minutes later, Greg Goodnight called and said it's already into Meek County.
Mm-hmm.
He had a tractor on Claremont Ranch with a disc hooked onto it.
And he's closer to Oklahoma, right?
Well, he's closer. He was right west of Englewood.
Okay.
And he said, get on it and head west. And so I got onto it and headed west and headed down to the north. After I got out west to the Clark County line, I went north to Old Goodnight's disking. And then at that time, decided that I better go to, it looked like that Ole's house was going to be okay, and there's a lot of farm ground in there. So I went to Wes McKinney's house and disked around that, and then I went to Chuck McKinney's house and disked around that house. And
you disked around it, how many rounds did you make?
Well, some places I couldn't get all the way around. So I was made about three or four passes on the way the wind was blowing at that time to keep it from, to block it.
Right.
So I was heading to David Clausen's at that time, and I just crossed the cattle guard coming out of the northeast pasture, and David called and says, where are you at? And I said, I just crossed the cattle guard. And I said, David, I can't remember how to get in the canyon south of your house. And he says, I'll be right there, and I'm on a tractor. And he said, you disc down in the bottom of the canyon. I'm going to go on through the trees. I can get through the trees. So I disced in the bottom of the canyon and made about three passes. And I came back out to see where the fire was at because I could not see it. And I thought I had time enough to get back down there and do some more. And I was down there, and I made one more pass, and the fire came over the top of the
The
canyon on me.
When you came out of the canyon, could you see all the smoke?
First
started.
Well, there was smoke. There was a lot of smoke when I was down in the bottom of the canyon.
Okay.
But I thought the fire was far enough away that it wasn't going to, you know, I had time. But no, all the time I was there, there was smoke.
Okay, so when you say the fire came over you in the canyon, what, did it just jump the canyon?
It just came right on over me, and I was in the middle of the disc ground. It was able to save, but I couldn't even see my hand in front of my face, and I couldn't find my way out of there. And I about fell off into the creek side of the canyon, and so I called Greg Goodnight, and I said, "Where are you at?" And he says, "I'm at the east end of the east end of the Grove tree row." And I said, "I'm in the bottom of the canyon, south of David's house. Can you come and lead me out?" And so he came there and led me out of there. But he didn't even see me until he was basically on top of me, and I was just on his tail all the way out of there.
So was it gray smoke or black smoke?
Black.
like pitch black?
It was grayish black, but mm-hmm. It was more black. I could not see anything.
When could you? I mean, did it clear off after a little bit, or?
Not all the time I was in the bottom of the canyon. It didn't. But when I got out, it was a grayish smoke on top.
Yeah. And so where'd you go once you got out of the canyon?
I got out and talked to Dan Clausen, and he gave me a bottle of water and gave me a pep talk.
Yep.
And I went north of the Quonset, went into the horse pasture, and I was trying to, but first off, I guess when I was in the bottom of the canyon, I had my walkie with me, and I heard Bernie call Comanche County and said, go to Mike McCarty's house.
Oh, they were close to your house and they needed Comanche County to come over?
To help save the house.
Yep. And so, you weren't anywhere close where you could go.
No.
Seth.
And all this time, I think I had taken time to call you.
Mike called me. When I knew he wasn't going, that was fine. But when he was called in, he called me and said, I'm going to go over and try to disc around some houses. It's so much farther advanced than what we ever thought. Mm-hmm. I don't know. And I said, okay. And so I knew he wasn't at home, but still I didn't think it was going to get that far. And so Kelly, my daughter-in-law, came home for lunch from work about 12 o'clock. And she ate real quick, and she said, I was telling her about the fire, and she said, well, do you think I should go out there? And I said, well, I don't think it's surely going to get this far. Everybody's out fighting, and I can't imagine it would get that far. And she went to work, back to work a little bit early, and she came back, and she was changing her clothes. And she said, I think I'm going to go on out there anyway. And I think she called her dad, and Travis was clear over on the I don't know where he was, a town in western Kansas. But he drove and met them there, so they were all at the house. And I did not really know what was going on. They were trying to let me know. I knew things were burning around the house, that they were trying to hurry and get... we had limbs still down from the ice storm mm-hmm. that had dried in the yard and around a lot of things, vehicles and what have you, and so they were trying to get those out of the way, move those, and they turned the water sprinkler, the yard sprinklers were still winterized, mm-hmm. but they figured out how to get that done and get the yard sprinklers on, because we have tall fescue right around our house, and it burnt clear up to that, and they were able to save the house, but the whole while I didn't know where Mike was. I didn't know what was going on for sure with Kelly and Travis and her dad.
Were you still in Ashland?
Yes, and then as I was feeling all this and not knowing for sure, town started to get smoky, and then I got the page before they actually came around to evacuate Ashland. So
did you get the IRIS alert?
Yes.
That came and
yes.
said evacuate?
Yes, it came over my phone, and so I called Kelly immediately and told her that they were evacuating the city of Ashland. And I'm grabbing things as I'm talking to her for the baby and get the dogs and all of that. And I didn't know which way to go. You know, I had their son. He's my grandson, but I...
So which way did you decide?
And she said, come out west. When everybody in Ashland was not going that direction. But I went ahead, and because I think I had sooner notice than people in town, I was able to get out of town. I think if I had not found out as early as I did, I probably might not have, but... We drove out west, and they were stopping traffic at the junction, but
who was stopping traffic?
Was it the State Department?
The DOT?
Yeah. And I wasn't very nice because, honestly, I said, I'm not going to mention names. I said, that is my house burning. And over there to the southwest are my cows, our cows. Mm-hmm. And I don't think they're going to make it. And I said, I'm obviously not going to drive any place harmful. I've got my grandson here with me. Yep. And I did tell her that I said, you're not stopping me. I am driving through here, and you can tell John Ketron. It's okay. I'll deal with him later.
Yep. So when you said they saved your house, who was at your house saving it?
Comanche County was there.
Did they get there?
And then when Travis got there and got the sprinklers turned on, mm-hmm. they went ahead and left to Gardner's house, Mark and Eva's house at that mm-hmm. time, because they knew that we was going to be okay. And so they went on and went to Mark and Eva's house.
Really too late?
Yep.
It already gone. How fast would you say that fire was moving when it like came over you and went through your house?
I figured it was.
Well, the wind was 70 miles an hour, so I
figured
would
it was going 80 miles an hour or more.
I would.
The air was burning in front of the fire.
So was the wind shifting at that time, or was it still blowing?
Then I was going to say, when I did turn, I pulled in at the corner there. I did not drive south to my house, even though everything in my bones wanted to go as close as I could to see exactly. But when I looked to the southwest, it was flames entire way for as far as the eye could see.
Was Mayhew's house burned at that time?
And oh, it had to have been.
So it was probably the house on the corner?
Yeah.
And as you looked to the northeast, as far as you could see to the northeast, everything was on fire. It was one huge line of fire and smoke.
What about west of that junction? Where Clausen's was? Already gone through?
It was still going at that time.
So I imagine that I got through when I drove out west of Ashland. I probably got through not too long before it actually got to the highway, mm-hmm. you know, like Garth Gardner's house and west of their ways where that was. But I will never, ever forget the sight of the fire. Something I would never have ever imagined could happen.
Yes. So did you finally make it down to your house?
No.
She went to Greensburg.
I stayed. Kelly's dad came up and was at the junction because I was I was beside myself because I did not have any contact with Mike. I didn't know where he was, if he was okay or anything. Well, and I didn't know if our house was still there, if our cattle were there.
I was on the phone with a lot of people. Like Mark Kaltenbach, I said, get out here, get your cattle moved off the Falcons, take them across the highway, put them on my wheat.
Right.
I called Walkers. I was on the phone.
So she wouldn't really been able to get a hold of you mm-mm. because you were crowd control.
But I was, after I came out of the canyon, I went north of the Quonset that burnt and went in there into the horse pasture.
Had it already burnt by the time you came out of the canyon?
No.
Okay.
And so we started up going on an angle to keep it from going on to the north because the wind was still blowing that away. And we made two passes. And when we got to the other end, the wind at that time had switched. And don't ask me what time of the day it was because it was always a blur.
But
the wind had switched. And I came out of there and I realized that the fire was still going to the north over in the sandbird pasture. And so I thought, well, maybe this, and I didn't know where all it was. I just knew that it was, I had crossed the highway. And so I disked there to keep it from going on north because of how the fire goes into the wind. And so I disked there, and then I went on down the road and just around Jackie Johnson or the Harden House and stuff like that. And it was getting later in the evening, and I went back to Claremont and dropped the tractor off, and I went home.
And the kids, I already knew that they didn't really say. The kids said that they went to try to move the cows out, mm-hmm. but they were too late. That's just so, they were just too late.
Because it was moving so fast.
Yeah.
But when I got to the house, it was already dark. But Travis, we didn't have electricity or anything like that. And Travis was trying to pour off of his vet box. We have a wooden fence around the house. And he was trying to put that out. That type of stuff.
With his little sprayer.
Pull the sprayer off his vet box.
And bottles of water that he had and that type of stuff. And so we hugged each other. And we hung around there. No electricity or anything like that.
Kelly had grabbed clothes before.
She grabbed clothes and
office supplies. She grabbed clothes and office supplies out of the house. I grabbed what I could out of their house because they really weren't too sure here in Ashland whether their house was going to be okay.
Right.
So she grabbed stuff, and eventually I wound up. I had to leave because I had the baby, so I went to Greensburg that night to stay with Kelly's.
How did you get to Greensburg?
I drove through Mineola. I went north to Mineola.
Yeah.
And the decision was made, once again, just in time. And so, just by luck, not because anybody knew anything.
But before, when I was going, before I even was Tully Goodnight's house, C.J. Bedford was coming with water. And he got turned around because there was another fire up at Denton's. And there were several other fires that whole night, that whole evening. So there. But when I got back home, we went and looked what we could do. And we just thought, well, we better just stay here. Because it was probably 11 o'clock by the time I got back to the house and everything. And I know the rest of the firemen was out, but I was drained. I couldn't.
So did you ever have any food to eat? Anybody show up with water or nothing?
Not at that time. No.
Not yet.
Food was the last thing in my mind.
Yeah, you weren't really hungry, were you?
You know, we had bottled water in the shop and that, but no, we just went there and slept we closed our eyes in the chair in case something else had on, and I had the walkie, and I know that my fellow firefighters was out all night, but I was...
Well, Mike's the oldest guy on the Englewood Fire Department.
I was drained.
Right. Yeah.
I was drained. Next morning, we talked to Denise.
I didn't see Mike until the next evening. I mean, I never did see him.
Travis and I went out. Kenny Allison showed up. And I'm sorry.
This is about the cows.
Yeah.
We start putting cows to sleep.
Yep.
At the house. But you know, we cried a lot. All three of us, grown men, cried, and then we would laugh. We would see something that was funny, like an armadillo, you know, that was dead or something like that.
Uh-huh.
But they're at the house, and we fed some hay.
Yeah.
And then the damn hay caught on fire. That we fed.
It was okay until you put it over.
We had
trees.
Most of our hay was burned up, but we put some hay out because I went up to the north house. It did not burn and got some hay.
Yeah.
And there wasn't many places for the cows that wasn't dead, that there wasn't fire. And we put it out where we thought, and that turned around and caught on fire again. And we was worried that they was going to get burned up and all this type of stuff. And so then we headed south to Sand Creek, north of Englewood. And it was just all what we saw down there. And we made the decision after we was in there that we need to get those cows down there back home. And we called Mike Greenleaf, and we called several other people. arteries from Buckland, from Greensburg came down with the four-wheeler. My green leaf came with the ground load trailer, and we tried to get those cattle gathered as good as we could. And I even went back home to get the feed truck, and the feed truck was... I went to Shaw's to get some grain to feed because I didn't have nothing else, and I blew an airline because it got too hot there because Kenny was able to move the trucks out and the some of the stuff out of the way. And so I parked it at Jim Cox's in another bad spot where a fire was coming that day. But anyway, you came by and picked me up. That was the first that I had seen
you. Yeah, that was the first time we had seen each
other. Denise came by and got me, and then I went back down to Sand Creek. And we got the cattle gathered, what we could, and we've starting to put cows down, and we started loading cattle. And
we didn't have any stock trailers. And they were all burnt up.
And
or didn't have any floorboards in them?
Nothing. And then a friend of ours from Wichita showed up, Dennis Noyes.
Yeah.
About, and I don't know all the...
it's hard to... So many
but he showed
good
up,
people.
But he showed up down there and started helping us. And then Dr. David Rethworth showed up.
And helped put
from Manhattan?
Yeah.
That is kind of a local
of
boy.
Kind of a local boy.
But anyway, he helped, and we loaded the cattle that we could, they could walk.
So this is still Tuesday.
On the next day.
Yeah.
Was that Tuesday?
Yes.
I don't remember. It's the 7th.
Yeah. Right.
And so we loaded them up and brought them back home. And David and Dennis Noyes went out and was killing cows. They, you know,
it was I had to, you know, Pat and Jerry Cryer live up the road. What is it, a mile even?
Yep.
And Jerry couldn't do anything, but he wanted to see what was. I mean, y'all, what do you do? And he sat up there and listened to him one after.
Well, this was a couple of days later.
Well, yeah.
But we had hay delivered that first day from people from Fowler and that.
And the only place we had to put it was in
the driveway.
That wasn't burning.
That wasn't burning or hadn't burned, just in the driveway. Right. So it wasn't any way to drive around to get up to our house very easily. But
so did the second day, did the fire come back? Or
no.
Did it keep going north
west? It was all east. The way. We was burned out so bad that
yeah, it was
you
burned.
Didn't have anything left.
We had nothing left.
And so you were
time.
Like putting the cattle that you were bringing home in a corral or something?
Well, we put them in our little lot that didn't have no grass or anything.
Right.
Had feed bunks there. And we started feeding them that. And... we were sorting cattle at that time. We sorted them down there, and we sorted cattle there. And then the next day, must have been Wednesday, we kept sorting. Well, the first day, Dave, I guess it was on Wednesday, Dave came to the house and said, Denise, you got to get the hell out of here.
I was in the house when the babies, and I just, it was a lot, but I just felt like, you know what, this is my deal too, and I just have to buck up. I never thought I'd ever experience anything like this. But then the next day, I waited, and
Dave came to the house.
He came to the house and said, "I'm not doing anything until you leave."
So, did you have a lot of smoke damage in your house?
Yes.
Oh, it was terrible.
We have a fifth wheel, and I don't know I don't know how come it did not take on. I don't know whether it just got spared out of the blue or what the deal was, but we finally had to move into that, and then our insurance company, when that guy was out, said this house has to be cleaned by professionals. Mm-hmm. And so we had to go through that, and that we joke around about that, but we're still trying to find stuff since they did that.
I guess it was the second day. Mush Rush, Red Angus, of Strong City, Kansas, brought a skid steer because he didn't have no way to.
Yeah. The skid steer was burnt up everything.
And they brought hay.
Yeah.
Before the end of the evening,
so,
our son-in-law from Seneca showed up.
We didn't know. That almost did me in Travis belonged to Farmhouse Fraternity, and that night, even though we didn't have anywhere, they slept all over every nook and cranny floor in Travis and Kelly's house, but they came, and they came with equipment. And that night, our son-in-law, Melinda's husband, is a Farmhouse Fraternity alum, a Farmhouse Fraternity brother of Travis's. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we'd talk to the kids and stuff, you know, and anyway, when those guys all got together, there was probably 10 of them. And Jeff was the farthest one away, but we didn't think he was coming, didn't think anything more about it.
And, well, came before the farmhouse guys came, Denise. He came,
that's right.
He brought hay.
He brought the hay. He brought a big load of hay, and I just started bawling the second I saw him.
When did your kids that live away know how you were and where you were after the fire? Did you talk to them at night?
I really don't know.
I talked to them.
I talked to them, and they wanted to come
right away. And my problem was, I did not want my grandkids to see that until we were better, you know. Until I don't know. I just really hated it. I knew it was going to make them sad, and it did. But it was probably a week and a half before they came home.
Well, but Jeff came back.
Jeff was here.
And then a lot of the farmhouse guys came that weekend and helped to clean up that type of stuff. And and then we had numerous friends, show up.
Yeah. When our kids did come, they all came at one time, and there was so much to do. And Mike, we had those two skid steers on loan, and the girls.
Well, we had three skid steers.
Three, yeah. The girls, you think, well, they forgot anything they ever knew when they left home, but all of a sudden, those two girls were out on a skid steer fighting about who got the one with the cab and things like that.
Dad loves you better than he loves me.
Things were normal, huh?
Yeah,
it was good to have him there.
But on the Sunday, and this is all blur and everything, we decided that we was going to run all of our cows through. And with Travis being a veterinarian, he could not take and sign off on our own cattle. Because Travis and I went to, a couple of days later, we went to other people's places to help put cattle down and that type of stuff.
Right.
But we decided that we was going to run our cows through. And Denise has a nephew that is a veterinarian that graduated the same day as Travis did from Scott City. And
his name is Kurt Vogel, and him and his wife Tatum came and...
And then
brought food and worked their tails.
Denise and Todd Klecker, that works for Clawson, came over and helped. And we run everything through, and we pre-checked everybody. We looked at every eye, at leg, every eye, and everything like that. And past employee Jeremy Miller came from Medicine Lodge, and he's kind of a gun fanatic and everything. And Travis called him up earlier that morning and said, "Jeremy, you better bring a lot more bullets," because that was the thing. It was hard to find enough bullets.
Right.
So he brought up several guns and a lot of bullets, and he got there. He couldn't put a cow down.
Couldn't do it, huh?
Because he had helped with all of them.
Their personal friends.
Yeah.
Yep. So when you first started finding the cattle, like Monday evening after the fire,
evening we did not find
Didn't
nothing.
See anything. It was Tuesday before you saw any?
Tuesday before we saw anything.
So what were some of the things? The hide burnt completely off, feet gone, hooves gone?
Some was completely dead, just the hide all burnt. Some, their hair was scorched completely. Some of them, their bags was burnt up. Some of them, their feet was completely gone. Some of them, their eyes was popped completely out of their heads.
So did you find any miracle cattle that weren't affected by the fire?
We had some that was not affected by the fire, and don't know what happened.
Or where they were.
Why or anything like that.
Yep.
We lost right at 50% of our cattle. And we saved, but we're still finding problems. We're still doctoring.
Right.
On calves and stuff like that. Uh-huh. We lost, I guess we had more calves than we did cows We had more cat died than we did calves for some reason. We was right in the middle of cabin.
Right.
And so, you know, people said, well, why didn't you get those, your own cattle moved out? From where they was at, it was going to take 9 miles to drive them to a wheat field. And some people got hurt.
Yes.
Yeah.
So did you have more than one burial place?
We had several burial places.
Did you just, like in the pasture where you found the majority of them, just do them there?
We was going to bury cattle were at home, and of course my mind wasn't working very clearly, and Dr. Rethorst said, how close are you to water?
Oh.
I said, about 6 feet. He says, and I said, we're changing our spot. So we had to call and get trucks, and we hauled cattle to another spot that was on top of a hill and that type of stuff. So, it was, and we sent a lot of cattle to Booker Pack for dog food.
So did it take a long time to get everything buried and assessed and stuff?
There was, it took time. There was people that, from other places that came in with dozers, and I cannot tell you their names. But came in with dozers and dug holes and pushed them in for us and buried them back up. But it took a while for the veterinaries to sign off on it. But our insurance company was right out right away. And
took care of your house and your buildings?
Right.
Did you lose any buildings?
Didn't lose any building. We got one tack room, horse barn. It's art fire. But I don't know how it didn't. Inside of our working barn, over by the cabin spot, there was a bale of hay. And the dog had laid on that bale of hay and kind of had moved out. And what did
there was
I found a spot.
Spot. He found spots inside
that was burnt.
It's very lucky that it didn't go ahead and just
torch. Huh?
Yeah. But,
I feel very lucky that our house was saved because, my goodness, we have so many friends that lost their house too, and I can't even imagine.
All right. So, what about fence line pasture?
Uh-huh.
You lost all your pasture? Lost all your
97%
fences?
97% of our grass was burnt. We're down to the last 6 miles of fence right now. I'm not exactly for sure. Something placed 40 some miles of fence. I'm not. We've been at it ever since the fire.
Since the fire.
And we had to build fence to hold cattle into the pens at home. People showed up right and left.
Yeah.
Don't even know who they all was. Alex Stapleton showed up with his crew and grabbed T-posts and went around and held things up. And people showed up with electric fence. And
it sounds like we know everyone that was there that helped, but we don't, because there were probably 10 times as many people as we've mentioned and can't possibly.
So did you get some of the volunteers that came to town?
Oh, yeah.
Through that time to help? Tear out fence.
But there was a lot of people that came. Derek Hubbard, Alex Stapleton, a lot of people.
Local people that came out and showed up.
And just pitched in and done whatever they needed to be. Sean LaBelle came out. And we had lost a lot more cattle, but about a week before that, we moved 70-some head first calf heifers out on wheat pasture.
So and they were okay?
They was okay. So
so many people did so many things that you can't really keep track of. And I can remember maybe on Wednesday after, no, it was Tuesday. I was kind of nursing a fire that kept flaring up from a tree that had gone down and with a hose. And I thought, I'm just going to go down there. I'm going to grab a hoe and go down there and a shovel. And I realized we had no shovels, we had no hoses, we had no hose, rakes, nothing. And so I thought, well, the next time I go to town, I'm going to have to go to the lumber yard and get those. And I had to go somewhere else and do something. I don't remember what that was. But I came back a few hours later and sitting, leaned up against the porch, was three rakes, three shovels, and three hoes and buckets, brand new, that somebody had left.
And sent them and rose and, donuts in the house.
And donuts, there were donuts, well, there, and the Christian church brought breakfast burritos, and all those fraternity boys were thrilled to death because they just came out and threw sacks at him, and oh, that was wonderful. But that's just one example.
So you don't know where the shovels and hoes came from?
Well, I don't know for sure, but I think Christy Lee and Ryan Lee came out, and because they had Home Depot on. I don't remember the organization.
Lions Club.
The Lions Club.
But she didn't tell me where they were from.
Okay.
Just that it was a Lions Club.
So there's a lot of things that we didn't know.
So there, yeah. But I mean, I just thought, oh wow, this is something. I mean, this has been on my mind, and I came home and here it is. And one thing, we had a lot of heavy duty extension cords that we've had forever.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike went to go plug something in.
We were going to plug the freezers into the generator.
Oh, that's right. We were going to try to plug our freezers into the generator, and we didn't have a darn cord one.
And CMS got there right away.
Yeah.
So you weren't out of electricity for a long time?
A couple days.
Yeah.
A couple days.
Not bad.
But then, like High Plains Feed, Cindy Wadley in Wright, Kansas, High Plains Feed came down with a barbecue grill.
And cooked hamburgers.
For all the people out there.
For everybody that was around.
People was tremendous how they'd done things.
Did you ever come to town to the Christian camp and eat a meal?
No, because...
I did later on when I had to bring some people through town, but it was a week later.
That was the nice part about the breakfast burritos, because there's no way that anybody of us would have had time to go to town for that we would have thought of, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I couldn't get over. And, you know, the other thing is that our kids, Melinda and Jeff, are from Seneca. Mm-hmm. Seneca came like no other with things. They sent food.
They was in contact with Jeff Kay. And Jeff told them, well, since Melinda's there, you need to. And they brought a lot out to our place, too.
Yeah.
What was it, 3 days after the fire? Our banker, Lindsay Martin, called up and said, "Don't worry.
Well, you
we
know,
got your back."
When you're in your mid-60s.
And then Candy Murphy called.
Mm-hmm. When you're in your mid-60s and something like this happens, and, you know, we're never out of the woods, but now you're looking at half of everything you ever had, and you've worked your whole life for it.
We might not make it yet. But
I don't know. We don't know yet.
but the volunteers, like Denise said, Seneca came, and Alberto Garden City hauled the first load of cattle to Booker Pack for nothing. And then when we had the next load, I called him up and I said, "I want to pay for this, but I need another truck." And he said, "Well, I don't have anybody," but he says, "I'll get somebody." Well, his name's Michael Miller from
Lakin.
And he showed up, and I really liked the young man. He showed up it was still dark. We got the cattle loaded earlier than what we wanted to. He gave me his phone number and said, "Is there anything I can do to help?"
Mm-hmm.
A couple, 3 days later, there was three trucks came from Michigan, and he let them in. And there was this young man that was driving a blue old Chevrolet semi-truck. And this kid got out of there, and at the time he was
19 years old,
illegal as all get out, came all the way from Michigan. And
he's a lifelong friend now.
And I got him unloaded, and he came up to me to the tractor, because at that time I did get a different tractor to unload hay with, and he handed me a wad of money, and I said, "I don't want it." He said, "Yes," and he threw it in the tractor. So we talked afterwards and everything, and they said we'd like to load his trailer onto another truck. And so we tried to load it, and we couldn't do it, and so I called Jeff Kay to see if we could come to town because they didn't want that young man to drive that truck all the way back to Michigan. And they said, well, go out to Gardner's. So I called Scott Toon and went out to Gardner's. And Nick Johnson,
mm-hmm. the Christian church
was standing there. And I said, Lane, I want you to meet this person. This is Nick Johnson, the Christian church minister. And I said, Nick, this young man gave me this money, and I handed it to him. And Lane says,
because
you really done that? And I thought, I made him mad. He said, you really done that? And I said, yes, I did. And he says, I'll be back. And he came back with another load of hay. And then he came out and stayed a full
during
week.
During his vacation. Ooh. Took his vacation.
Stayed a full week and worked. And he wants to come back again. And ever so often, he'll text me and call me and, you know.
Yeah.
Lots of.
That's the type. And there was a number, numerous of them. I can't tell you all of them, but those are ones that stick in our mind.
The bad part is we can't even get thank yous out to everybody because we don't know everybody. Yeah.
Heard that several times. So you're getting pretty good at taking donations?
Yeah.
Hey, and
yeah, we're getting good at saying.
It's a lot easier to give than to receive.
In the beginning, it was horrible.
But right.
But after a while, you realize you really do need the help. Mm-hmm. And, we'll never be able to pay back everything.
And there's still people that since we get a $50 mm-hmm. or $100.
Go out to dinner or do something, you know.
Yeah, get out of the fire.
Yeah, yeah.
So what's your most vivid memory of the fire?
The sight of it.
What about you?
I got so many, I don't know which one it is.
To me, I didn't think
the
anything.
Vivid one.
Yeah.
The most
one
vivid.
One or two or three, if you know. Things that leap out at you that you'll always remember, you'll never forget.
Seeing the fire come over the top of the canyon wall. Mm-hmm. Seeing the dead cattle.
Yep.
Seeing my grandson.
Well, we had...
Denise had him out a couple, 3 days afterwards, and we have a Kubota side-by-side, and she was going down the driveway, and he would just look out there and shake his head.
Because he had come out on weekends, you know, so right. He knew about the babies, and we were watched his dad, and he would giggle whenever a cow got a little rambunctious, so very protective and stuff. And so he saw all these cows and babies, and I didn't know at his age, he wasn't quite two yet, and mm-hmm. so I wasn't sure how, but I needed anyway. When he came out after the fire, it seemed like he sort of was like, what's going on here, you know? And
then seeing our other grandson, Melinda's
he's
son,
a year younger.
After we got back to the house, we was out of the house for 3 days. After we got back in the house, the wind blew, and he playing on the kitchen floor, looked like he was outside playing.
He did.
That's how much more dust we had after they cleaned it.
He was crawling, and he was just black from... Yeah. The soot from coming in the back door, we just couldn't keep.
So was there a lot of soot? And because at some point they said that the wind blew so hard that the dirt covered up the soot.
Some of the places it did. But even to this day, Diane, some days I'll come in, take a shower, and there'll be black on the bottom of the shower.
From wherever maybe he was with the fence or stuff. There's still a lot
of... There's a lot of soot still. Mm-hmm.
So how's your grass doing?
Like I tell people, it looks great 70 miles an hour down the road, but you get out on it, and it's not that great. The sand hills are terrible. Weedy is all get out. The bottom lands, the grass is thin. Our buffalo grass and side oak scramma grass that's native to this area, it hurt bad. Mm-hmm. The big blue, little blue, Indian grass, and all those that has the deeper roots, are coming along, but it's thin. It was so hot it burnt the roots.
Yeah. You have lived in this area your whole life, and you've seen wildfires before and everything. How does this compare even to a controlled burn? Is there anything you can match them up?
Nope.
I can't compare it to anything.
I've been into some hellish fires.
And also, I can remember when I very first came here, if there was a fire, we just had wet gunny sacks and shovels.
And a spray rig.
And a spray rig. And this mm-hmm. was like an unbelievable. It was just.
There's nothing you could do.
No.
The only thing that you could do is go to house control. Save people's homes.
Yep.
We never lost homes from grass fire in Clark County before.
Nope. Who are some of the people or the agencies that helped you most? And I think you've talked about a lot of them. But going forward, like, did you take advantage of the Community Foundation having an application and the KLA help?
We took advantage of those right off the bat.
Working Ranch.
Tyler Wolfolk called and says, you're a member of Working Ranch Association. You don't have to be, but I'm sending you an application to that. And within a few days,
we got help from them.
Financial help from them. You know, my sister Cheryl from Colorado came out, and she don't have any family or anything like that, and she gave us a little bit of money in that. And but no, we took advantage of everything that we could take advantage of. And but you asked if we came into the Christian church. Really, we didn't.
Didn't have time?
Didn't have time.
No, we didn't really have time. And then, too, when I said about the fraternity boys being there, Sally Shattuck brought out 2 days over the weekend those guys were there. She basically fed those guys, you know, in the evening time.
Right.
She brought out meals two days in a row for about 20 people. But she, you know, she wasn't the only one. There was lots of mm-hmm. people. So we didn't have probably the need to do that. I did feel good kind of toward the end. I was able to go in and help Kelly sometimes when the Christian church had to close up their camp for food. Then it was kind of a community sort of thing. So I was able to go in and help with some of the
kind of be a volunteer.
Be a volunteer myself.
Especially when Kelly was coordinating the volunteers while he was gone.
Yeah.
But what was more impressive to me than anything, and the whole deal is, that people forgot about their differences.
Yeah.
People wasn't bickering at each other anymore.
They didn't have time.
Worked together. Well, and I don't think that people are still.
It's just the different sense.
I don't think people are came back to that yet. I know I haven't, and I don't think anybody else has came back to it, you know.
Everybody still wants to help everybody.
So do you think that's an emotional response to the whole thing, and the way people are coping with the fire?
Yeah, I do.
So the stuff you lost, what do you miss most?
The cows and the babies and the grass.
Is there anything you can perceive of anything positive that's come from the fire?
Yeah.
Like you were saying.
People got along better. We're going to have new fences. About 97% of her, you know. My daughter-in-law, Kelly, has made the comment that our grandkids are not going to learn how to repair fence. But no, there's been a lot of positive things. People coming in, everybody working together, it's been positive.
We've made a heck of a lot of friends, and you know, actually, I have friends that I've had pretty much my whole life that are from Spearville, and they have been down as a couple, but. Not more him, more him than his wife. But every time he came, she sent food, like two or three fried chickens or things for the freezer. I mean, you know, just like I said, we couldn't begin to even name or mention the ways that people have helped us. And they themselves had tragedy in their family. And she said, this is like a little drop in the bucket of paybacks for us, And I said, I know, I thought we'll never be able to pay back enough to other people in need to compared to what we've received.
So do you think there was more of a physical or a financial toll from the fire?
Financial.
Do you think it's going to last a while?
We'll get along okay this year, but the next several years is going to be a burden. It's going to be very, very difficult.
Especially in the agricultural world with the
because we
prices.
Have not had good prices. You know, we pay so much for everything we buy, and what we receive has been really low. And it's going to be financial. I hate to say that, but it's going to be financially burdened for several years with the price of fences and everything like that. And had to replace equipment. You know, yeah, we had insurance, but insurance don't replace it back
it
to,
doesn't. Yeah.
To where what you had, you know.
Plus, did you have all the things you lost covered?
90%,
like
90% of it. Tractors. The stock trailers wasn't covered. The riding lawnmowers at the house. And
we lost two good riding lawnmowers. My favorite.
You know, just little things like that. You know, you don't think about that type of stuff, but everything else was covered.
Yep.
You know, but not enough to for. If you're going to have to replace something, you want to replace it better. You want to replace your junk better than what
as
the junk was.
As good or better.
Better.
And, yeah.
You don't want somebody else's junk headache.
There's no farm sale now to go to
right.
replace
yeah.
some stuff.
We bought a lot on Big Iron. That's a farm sale, but, you know.
Yeah. So what can you do or have you done to prepare for a future fire or another type of disaster? Have you made plans to...
Truthfully, to me, Diane, right now, we haven't done anything because we're still coping with this one.
I think, I don't know what we would do differently. I don't know. I mean, seems like when God decided he was going to start a fire that day, he did. And we're not sometimes going to be able to prepare for things.
I don't know how to really answer that question. Maybe other people can answer that, but you know, in our where we live at, we can't make fire guards, you know, in the grass that good, you know, because we're on sand and it'll blow away.
Yeah.
You know, it's heartbreaking to see all the trees.
I think one thing though, all of the fences now are metal.
Yep. We put everything. Well, not all of them. We put.
Well, but they're not. There aren't very many wooden fence posts.
Got mostly
pipe and steel.
Pipe and and T-posts and stuff.
Yeah.
You didn't put any creosote in.
So
well,
we put a little bit in when we have volunteer people.
But I mean, if that
what we're paying to put in, we're putting back in with pipe.
But if that counts as maybe looking into the future, if that ever happened again, I guess that counts.
Yeah. Yeah.
What does other people say on that one?
I had one guy tell me that he would always have a wheat field on the west side of his house because they thought the wheat field saved his house. Uh-huh. There's other that said they were going to go through and make sure that they had all of their personal papers and things like Grandma's quilt or stuff like that that they wanted to save. But basically people said, you know, it's...
Where we live at, we can't have a wheat field.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's great to say that right now, but
we
all become lackadaisical, and we want to show Grandma's quilt you know.
Well, what I was going to say is when we first moved in that house, it was Mike's grandparents' house, and there was never grass in the yard. Mm-hmm. And so Mike was bound and determined that we were going to have grass. We were going to have a yard. And so I'm thinking we're going to do buffalo grass and, you know, like that kind of thing. And nope, we're having tall fescue. Well, I moped and groaned and complained about that, but him and Alex Stapleton put a sprinkling system in around the house, and he planted that grass, and he's babied that grass around, and I just thought, oh, you have to mow it all the time, and I just complained and moaned and groaned about it. But that tall fescue and that sprinkling system saved our house. Yep. So I guess we were already prepared on one front and didn't realize. <Yeah.
laughs> So what about the community? Or the how prepared do you think we really were? That, like, emergency, fire?
I really think our fire department is all three of our fire departments in the county is prepared for the normal fire.
Right.
That was not a normal fire, and we might not ever see that type of fire again. I hope we don't. But I think that we was prepared. Even the Anderson Creek fire wasn't as bad as a fire as that one. And, you know, we go out and help our neighboring counties, and people comes in and help us.
But even beyond the fire department, I think everybody, I felt like everybody did an excellent job. I'm not sure that there could be much more improvement, but I don't know, because I'm just speaking from our experience.
Did you have a lot of, besides the tractors, you had people out on their tractors, did you have some spray rigs over that part of the county? Or was it just moving too fast?
It was moving too fast. They couldn't keep up. Yeah, there was spray rigs, like I said, over at Gardner's and that. And there was Comanche County was there. But at the time that it got to our house, they was pretty well in Englewood trying to save houses in town. And, you know, they couldn't be at every house. But there's no way to get spray rig to every place that needed to be that day. That many miles of fence, miles of fire.
Did you see fire all night?
Yeah.
And then the next day, was there fire close to you? Or was it mainly just...
There were patches when I came home. There were, you could see fires burning in lots of different places around, patches.
And there was some to the west of us that was still burning.
Yeah.
Not very much to the south, because it was already burned out. And then we could see fire over here that burnt the next day. But they were just patches that when the wind changed and it didn't burn, it burned again.
Yeah. So did you see the task force that came to help?
We saw them.
Were they out in your area?
Basically, they didn't come to our area because we didn't need them.
You were done?
We saw the Black Hawk or whatever fly over. You know, and that, but, and they did put out some other stuff like that. And we did call Englewood and say, even when I'm on the fire department, I called and said, can somebody bring up a tanker tonight and put these trees out that we couldn't get out with the garden hose?
Yeah, we worked with it, because we did. We worked on, between Kelly and I, we worked a day and a half.
And I said, I don't want you coming until you've rested, you know.
But it was simple things, like there was a patch of grass by the fence along where you walk along to go into the house that would not die.
Right.
I mean, I went out and put water on that thing. I didn't have a shovel or a hoe at the very beginning. And then by the time that came or got there, then I just used branches to kind of stir it, but there was little hot spot things like that would come up just right there, and even though there was nothing obvious left to burn, you still worried about it. You still thought you needed to get it out.
Yep. So you think the volunteers or all the people that came to help pushed you into doing something instead of sitting and grieving what you had lost?
Yeah.
As I told one volunteer, one group of people that brought stuff in, they said, how does this affect you? And I said, if it hadn't been for all you guys coming in here, we'd have our heads down kicking rocks. But with you guys bringing all this stuff in here, donations, hay, everything, we can hold our heads up high and be proud.
And keep trying, yeah.
Is what I told one person.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a big help.
But, you know, it I don't know if it pushed us because we had the will to do something. But, you know, when people show up.
You appreciated even the person who could not physically or maybe any other way do something, but they wanted to see you. and tell you I care. All of those things were important to me anyway.
Yep.
And we had that. And, yeah, we would have been really crying around if we hadn't had. We didn't have time to cry then. We got time to cry now. But we didn't have that.
Oh, we did cry.
Well, we did, yes. Yeah, but you didn't stand, it didn't last long.
It didn't last long, you know.
But like you said, it turns into laugh.
Well, yeah. When you see an armadillo dead,
yeah.
Or you see...
I've been looking for that guy.
And you had a lot of cattle. But did you also see a lot of wildlife?
Yeah.
The first morning after the fire, we don't have very many pheasants, but there was this pheasant walking around on the burnt ground. And off to the distance, we could see a deer stand on the hill. I did not personally see any dead wildlife.
No, I didn't either.
As I was running around the pasture, I know other people said they did. Maybe I wasn't looking hard enough. But I do know that some of them I have seen now that their ears was burnt. And, you know.
And that probably also helped promote the fire a little bit, too, because they were trying to run to maybe caught on fire and trying to run to save themselves, and it probably didn't help. That probably didn't help anything either.
So do you have any other thoughts about this experience that you'd like to include?
I think I talked enough.
Do you?
I'm just thankful to God that we're okay and we had all the help that we had. And
I don't know about a lot of other people, but it was hard to sleep for a number of nights.
Yeah.
Oh, when? How about the smoke smell? Did it stay around for a long time?
It did.
And can you still kind of smell it?
You can sense it. Yes.
Sometimes it just depends on the atmosphere, maybe, or something like that. But once in a while, you get a whiff of smoke.
Every day that first couple weeks, a little bit different.
Yeah. There was a lot of days when the kids was here working, and we just called them and told them, go to the house. The wind was blowing so hard, the sand was blowing them, just beating them to death, you know.
Really, the first day when the wind came up so badly, the next day, and there was nothing in the sand hills to hold anything down.
Right.
And it was so dirty that you couldn't see down the highway on Highway 160 heading south to Englewood. You couldn't see anything. And I thought that that was the way things were going to be. But fortunately, we didn't have very many more days of that.
That one day that we had a whole bunch of people, some farmhouse, Jim Mall and his boys was there. We were sitting at the house eating dinner, and the sheriff cart pulled up. And I looked out, and it was Wally Long.
And I said,
they're delivering our foreclosure papers. And Wally just came up to the house and says, can I do anything? Can I help? And
he came out
a couple of days later and worked. You know, he brought out his trailer.
Yeah.
He just was going around places. And I didn't know Wally at that.
We didn't know him at all.
I knew him, but I did not know him.
Right.
You know. But I became very good friends, and him and Linda became like this because they worked together. And, they got to know each other really well.
So how do you feel now? It's kind of down the way, kind of got some cattle rebought, grass is coming up, plant wheat. Do you feel like you're stronger or...
I don't know.
Holding your head above water?
I would just say this. At this point, I wish we were 45 instead of 65.
Right.
So that makes a difference in how we feel, I suppose.
Every day's a new day, Diane. Mm-hmm. Some days, really up, pumped up high. Some days, I try not to be low. I kind of pump my own self back up. But some days, it's hard to...
What do we want to do? Do we want to just throw in the towel at this point? Probably would have been easy enough, but we have a son and a daughter-in-law and a grandson living here. So, therefore, it makes it a little bit harder to say, oh, we're done. No, we're not going to do that. And besides that, what else would we do?
But on those days that we feel like we're low, just a little bit low, we talk to each other, or I call Bernie Smith, or
give each
David
other pep
Clawson,
talks.
Or
right,
and because they are in the same boat. We're not alone. That's the thing.
Yeah. And some days we're both, like when I talk to Bernie, we're both down, but we pump each other back up to, because we know we got to, you know. Yeah. We maybe lie just a little bit and say it's going to get better, you know.
That's true. So we want to thank you for sharing your experience with the library. And
I hope that we wasn't too dumb with what we said.
Nope, not a bit.
I hope we didn't rattle off too long.